the most beloved person in America is on this radio show, Betty White. I've been friends with Betty for years, and I know this. For decades, for example, she's been on the board of directors of the Morris Animal Foundation, and she sits in on these meetings still sometimes. And she says, stop. Let me tell you what I understand about dogs. When they get sick in this kind of disease, this happens, then this happens. I mean, she really knows her stuff when it comes to companion animals. It is always a pleasure to talk with the one and only Betty White. We sat down with her a couple of weeks ago. Now it is time for you to hear that conversation. So I want to talk about animals and pets with you. But since we're on this topic, you've done so much on television. Of course, Mary Tyler Moore Show, the Golden Girls, now hot in Cleveland. Guest star appearances that if we named them all, it would take up the entire interview time. I mean, it goes on and on. So here's the impossible question that I will ask anyway. Aside from the TV series that we know you from, that I just rattled off, do you have a favorite moment, a moment maybe that we wouldn't think about, Betty White being one of her favorite moments for you on TV?
And that's a tough one. Over 65 years that's on television, that's a tough one to come up with off the top of my head. But I think sitting with Johnny Carson and just talking like two old friends, I think that's probably among my most precious moments.
What was it about Johnny Carson that made him, listen, I mean, Jay Leno is wonderful, Jimmy Fallon, David Letterman, you're great with Craig Ferguson, I love that.
I love Craig.
All of the contemporary hosts that you appear with, wonderful. What was it about Carson?
He was totally unique, and there's never been another one like him, although so many people try to emulate him, but he would sit there and never try to top his guests. If somebody came on, somebody funny like a Buddy Hackett or something, he'd let him have his head. He'd let him go and do all the comedy, and he would just sit there and moderate. But he would do it in such a way that you couldn't watch Buddy. You were watching Johnny.
Is it because he had a certain something? Not that Buddy Hackett or any of those stars of that era needed help, or any of today's stars need help, but he would actually somehow feed them lines that would make them even better.
He set them up.
Yeah.
He set them up to be brilliant. And that takes, somebody can set people up like that, and other people can make it impossible for them to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He was just one of a kind. And when he continued that for over 30 years, you know he had to be special.
But yet in person, they say, Johnny was not a guy you'd necessarily sit down and have a drink with after the show.
No, he was a very private person. I think I'll tell you what one of my most precious moments, it just came to me.
Yeah.
When Alan Ludden and I, my beloved husband Alan, and I met and fell in love and got married and had this exquisite marriage. And Johnny would make jokes about Betty and Alan, that because we both had a kind of a clean image. He'd say they don't even take showers together, and they don't. And he'd go all through all these ridiculous things about how pure and simple we were, and. To the point that some of the squares in the audience got furious because they thought he was putting us down. Well, we loved it, of course, because it was fun. And so he would, for a long time, he would make these Betty and Alan jokes as the dullest marriage in the whole world, when in truth we were maybe the happiest. But he would do it in such a way that we knew he was doing it lovingly. So one night on the show, he leaned over to me during a commercial, and he didn't often talk during commercials because he was looking at the notes for who was coming up. He leaned over to me and he said, Betty, I never understood what you and Alan had. I just didn't get it until I met Alexis. and that's his will, of course. And he said, he said it just changed the world. Now, for Johnny to get that personal,
yeah,
and that talk about something that close to him, I was thrilled. I was really thrilled. So what? I think that's my highlight.
That's a nice highlight. And you know what? From what I've heard about Johnny Carson, that never happened. I mean, where Johnny would, from what I've heard, he looked down, he read the notes at commercials, as you mentioned, and with the exception of a handful of, like, the A-listers, you know, that he would like to hang out with or did, he was this incredibly private guy.
He was, and that's why to have him find the right person was so wonderful.
And Johnny was one of those also, I've read, that, like, let's save it until the microphone goes on, you know?
Yeah, don't you? Well, and he'd never do a pre-interview or even talk to people in the hall, because you blow your whole interview.
Do you feel...
You know, you say it all in the hall, and then by the time you get out on stage, oh, yeah, we did that.
Do you feel badly for some of the actors coming up, the Hollywood movie star types, because of the paparazzi thing? I mean, you never had to... It wasn't like that. To that extent in the 50s?
Yeah. At all. And they respected you. But it's funny. Times change. And the thing about Johnny, the same man discovered both of us. Don Federson, who was the manager of KLAC television, local television out here in Los Angeles, he kind of grew us both up because he put us on the air at the same time.
And he put you on the air from doing radio, if I'm recalling correctly, and then you just transitioned into this live TV show that I don't think we could even fathom. It was like live radio on TV. Is that kind of like what it was?
Yeah, but live television just started then. It had started in New York. And then it was almost a year before it got out to Los Angeles. So he just gave us a microphone and put us on the air in front of a camera 5.5 hours a day. And no script, no nothing. You just, guests would come through and you'd talk to them. But you never did pre-interviews and you never had any notes. You would just go for broke. Of course, I'd have as many animals on there as I possibly could.
Well, thank you for making that transition for me. So I've got to tell you where we returned from Africa, Rwanda, to see the mountain gorillas.
You didn't.
It was amazing.
Oh, Steve. Oh, that's wonderful.
So we would get up early in the morning. We did this, and I'm telling you this because I know you care so much about it, but I'm also telling you that, and you know why, the Morris Animal Foundation for years funded the Mountain Gorilla Project. And after Diane Fossey was killed, if it wasn't for the Morris Animal Foundation, and incidentally, this story now has been confirmed many times by people who know, if it wasn't for the Morris Animal Foundation then, at that time, coming in, who knows what would have happened to the Mountain Gorilla Project, and without that, who knows what would have happened to the mountain gorillas? Probably nothing good. And I choose the tour operator, Terra Incognita Eco Tours, for specifically one reason. They actually work with the gorilla veterinarians, which, again, the Morris Animal Foundation originally set up. So here's the thing about the mountain gorillas. They wouldn't be, and they're the only great ape species to be gradually, but yet increasing in numbers, the only great ape species, sadly, orangutans because of deforestation, because of the cutting down of the forest, chimpanzees for the same reason and other reasons, they are disappearing. The other species of gorillas are disappearing as well. And the bonobo, the other great ape species, kind of like chimpanzees.
Like a pygmy chimp.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they are. And they are all, sadly, their numbers, all of those are declining, mountain gorillas going up, and that's because of tourism. The tourists bring in so much money to these countries, particularly Rwanda and Uganda, And Rwanda, especially, is set up for it. And it brings in this money that then goes back to the mountain gorillas, but also goes back to all these jobs. And the government there realizes, well, without tourism, then we might be in trouble. You know, it helps us, and it helps our people. So they want to, they're encouraged, they're motivated to protect the mountain gorillas.
And mountain gorillas and their other animals. It's the animals that attract the tourism.
Yeah, so it's, you're right. So it's the mountain gorillas may be the star attraction. Like if I go to see a show that Betty White is in, she's the star attraction. But there are all these co-stars that are all the other animals that live in the forest that are saved by default, because if the forest is protected, then all these other species, including the plants, too, are all protected as well. So that's absolutely wonderful.
And you know how long it has taken us to convince the population that their animals are their financial treasure?
Well,
they never even thought of it.
Well, the good news, having just gotten back from there, at least in Rwanda, they get it. So, yes. So that's the good news. So it's interesting to me, though, because without tourism, the mountain gorillas would not be thriving, I think is a safe way to say it. They would not be doing as well as they're doing. However, we are also the greatest threat. And you probably know this, but I'll tell everyone else why. So you go up there and you get really close to these mountain gorillas. You're supposed to stay 10 meters away. That's what the rules say, but the mountain gorillas have not read the rules. So they come right past you. They go right by you. And they're not interested in you so much. They're just going from one tree to another or from one place to another to eat. Or, oh, I'm going to go over there because I want to see those gorillas over there and visit with them. And you just happen to be right there, and they walk right by you.
And they've gotten so people-oriented now that the people no longer surprise them.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We're just there, you know. And this is, it makes it more interesting. They are absolutely desensitized to people. They go about their own business, whether we're there or not there. The same exact behaviors, which is great. However, in going up to see the mountain gorillas, a species related to us, we potentially can bring disease. Even if we're not sick from those germs, because we've built up immunity, the gorillas haven't.
And the gorillas have no immunity. And that's why the rules, I think if we're privileged enough to get to see them, and I would make book that you obeyed the rules. But if we break the rules and get sooner or later, somebody's going to pick up a germ.
Well, even without breaking the rules, as I was saying, the gorillas don't read the rule book, so they come close to us, which is fascinating. It's exciting. But there was one group of gorillas that was, some of the gorillas were coughing. So what they did is they stopped the tourists from going there, and then the veterinarians come in, and it's those veterinarians that the Morris Animal Foundation supported for years. And the reason why I chose this trip with Terra Incognita Ecotours is just for that very reason, Betty. It's because they support the Mountain Gorilla Veterinary Project, so, which I do too. And it's amazing what they do. So, well, we have saved the gorillas. Ironically, we are also somewhat of a threat, potentially, and sometimes in reality, bringing in germs. It's not our fault. It's just because we're there. Even if we're obeying the rules, the germs don't read the rules and the gorillas don't read the rule book. So, you know, it's just fascinating. But I will tell you, just sitting there for the time that you're allotted, which is an hour, and watching, it's just amazing. If you were to put some of the photographs I took of the gorilla babies that we were, it was just a thrill to see them, and then put them next to a human baby. The expressions are the same. Everything is the same.
Oh, I would kill to see those pictures.
Oh, anytime. I'll email them to you.
Oh, I would love to see them.
Yeah, I know how to get email to you. I'm happy to do that. It was just, it was the most amazing experience, and it's absolutely life-changing. You know, it is.
The whole perspective changes completely.
Well, and you know that you're sharing. And then we went to the Serengeti and we saw all these other animals. And I had done that, but it had been, you know, for about 20 years since I was last in Africa. And it was my wife's first opportunity. And to see oh gosh, elephants and all these antelope species and wildebeest and zebra and lions and leopard and all of these animals just doing what they do and just living out their lives. We share this planet, and it would be just such a tragedy. And I'd wonder about our own future, actually, if enough of these animals go away.
You know who's in trouble? The lions. Lions are in very big trouble, and we take lions for granted, the king of the beasts, of course.
Yeah, I'll tell you who's in more trouble, are cheetahs.
Oh, well, that's been a while.
And
they're so precious. Cheetahs used to be private pets in ancient Egypt. They would be household, you know, pets like my big golden retriever who's on the couch with me as we speak.
Pontiac.
Pontiac, of course.
Yeah, and cheetahs, you know, so what I learned there is domestic cats can suffer from a kind of disease called feline infectious peritonitis as kittens, and it's fatal. Now, the good news is, through the WIN Feline Foundation funding, I know you're aware of WIN, that for FIP, or feline infectious peritonitis, there really has been at least a little bit of progress now, which is incredible. And so that's the exciting news. What was interesting, though, is cheetahs are now also succumbing as cubs, as very young cubs, to FIP as well. And they're getting mange as well as that. And they can't, again, there are veterinarians there, and I didn't know this myself, in the Serengeti, who, if they spot an animal that's endangered, that it's going to be life and death, and they can jump in there and help, they will. But for FIP, there's nothing for domestic cats or wild cats, and cheetahs are the only wild cats, as far as I know, that get FIP, that there's nothing a veterinarian can do anyway. So my hope is that maybe we could study cheetahs, help them, and in the process help domestic cats, and I told them that. So maybe that will happen. Let me ask you a question. If Betty White could come back as any animal on the planet, not including dogs, because then the answer would be a dog and your dog specifically, but any other animal, what would it be?
I've been asked this, and I always sort of come up with the same answer: a moose. I know everybody laughs, and I say it quite seriously.
Betty, I must tell you, I've walked down the street with you, and you smell nice. You don't smell like a moose.
No, but I also don't live in the country that they live in. They live in these high mountain lakes. In the high mountains and with the woods and the isolation, and that's what my choice would be.
Betty, I could go on with you, and I'd like to go on for hours. It is always just a joy, and I love you. I'm not alone. America loves you, but I think you know that.